From NPR Music, this is Alt Latino. I'm Felix Contreras. The 90th Annual Academy Awards are coming up. The Oscars, a night when Hollywood celebrates a year's worth of film achievement. This Oscar season was notable for the release of the Pixar film Coco, an animated film that told a story built around the Mexican folk celebration Día de los Muertos. Some industry websites cite worldwide earnings of over $500 million, which is considered a Hollywood success. Many of us will be watching the Oscars as the film is nominated for two Academy Awards, Best Animated Feature Film and Original Song for the tune Remember Me. But for some, Oscar night is also a time to be reminded that, Coco notwithstanding, Hollywood very often fails to be inclusive. 2 years ago, that perspective hit critical mass with the hashtag OscarSoWhite movement, which did cause a bit of industry introspection. In fact, very often we have to leave the studios of the Hollywood ecosystem and enter the world of independent film to find the diverse communities that we actually live in. This month, our primos at PBS, the public broadcasting system, will feature two documentary films made by independent Latino filmmakers that tell very different but crucial life stories of historical figures that are important parts of the continuum that is the history of Latinos in this country.
Hi, I'm Philip Rodriguez, and I'm the director of The Rise and the Fall of the Brown Buffalo.
Hello, I'm Peter Bratt, and I am the director of Dolores.
This week, we talk to those directors about their work, the stories they tell in the films, and also get their thoughts on filmmaking in general. Now, there won't be any music in this week's show, except for bits of music from an album called Pasar de los Luces from the band Mint Field, a very creative duo from Tijuana. The films Dolores and The Rise and Fall of the Brown Buffalo are two very different films about two very different people who ultimately had the same goals, but went about it in two very different ways. The Brown Buffalo in the title is Oscar Zeta Acosta, a controversial figure from the front lines of the Chicano movement of the early 1970s. Here's director Philip Rodriguez.
Oscar Acosta was a late 20th century Mexican-American figure who was a lawyer, was a civil rights activist, a poet, a novelist, mischaracterized by the mainstream culture as being a sidekick to Hunter Thompson. He was indeed a friend of Hunter Thompson and was immortalized in a cartoonish way as Dr. Gonzo in the countercultural classic Fear and Loathing in Las Vegas by Hunter S. Thompson. His was a really big life. And I'm interested in him for a lot of reasons. One is because I became a little rather weary of the usual way of doing stories about the civil rights era. Very often they're painted in these warm tones, all sanded down, no more splintered identity, no more struggle, really. Everyone is good, Rousseauian, kind of reduced into caricatures, puppets to flatter white supremacy. And Oscar Acosta was none of those things. He was really kind of rude and wild and erratic and hungry and horny and self-hating and really beautifully transparent in a certain way. He had mental illness. He was really very human. And so I really was eager to portray a civil rights era figure, a particular Latino Mexican-American figure, in a way that felt true, kind of human and flesh and bones.
I had been away from my people for so long that I had forgotten many of our tribal rights and customs.
The Rise and Fall of the Brown Buffalo is a hybrid film of sorts. It's a documentary in the form of a dramatic recreation featuring an actor as Oscar Acosta narrating his life story. Director Rodriguez uses interviews with actors portraying important people in Acosta's life. And all of this is interspersed with archival news footage of Acosta himself.
I swear to God they're going to keep on killing. They're going to wipe us out.
The men look at me strangely. Everyone is committed to death, but my commitment is different, larger than theirs.
I have been a fan of the Brown Buffalo since I read his stuff
Orale.
At Fresno State in the 70s, okay?
Orale, there you go.
76, 77. I really appreciated the movie because, as you said, he is a historical character that certainly is, I guess, as they say, it's complicated. It's complex, and there's all kinds of things. But I'm glad that the movie was made because it put him in the context of what was going on in the broader Chicano civil rights movement at that time. And I wonder if you can talk to me a little bit about that and why that is important to distinguish that from what was going on in civil rights in general.
One of the things that's interesting about Oscar is that he was kind of on the assimilation track in a big way. He was a president of a student body in Riverbank High School in a small rural California town that was not particularly ecumenical or kind of welcoming non-white identities. And Oscar really achieved respectability among in a white-dominated culture early. And I think at some point Oscar hits a wall, and he understands that maybe, as he said, if I can't make it in this Anglo society, how can anybody else, any other Latino, any other Chicano? And so he changes course in midstream, and then spends some time in Aspen, Colorado with Hunter Thompson and those ski bums, and decides that they too are really not adequate. He's looking for to be understood because he's struggling for himself, and he's also looking to be part of a movement and part of a revolutionary cause. So he comes down to L.A. when L.A. is already starting to bloom in terms of its Chicano descent period, and steps into it and offers his services. Quite arrogantly comes and says, listen, I'm a lawyer and I hate lawyering, but for you, I'll do it. Moreover, he was a little bit messianic, and he says, I'm here to be your leader. Oscar, kind of maybe the right place at the right time or the wrong place with the wrong character. It's hard to know. It's such an imperfect story. Yeah. And it's such a weird process, his life. And of course, he was cut down rather early, or rather he disappeared at the age of 39. So he didn't get to kind of complete his cycle. But what we have of him is really, really interesting. It's really worth meditating on.
Some of the things that he says in the film, because you found actual film clips of him speaking, news clips from interviews and things like that. Some of that resonates today in terms of standing up and fighting for freedom and fighting for injustice within the political climate that we're in now.
It is the police department and the sheriff's department that produce a lot of this crime that we hear of. They are not a policing agency any longer. They are a militia. They are there not to protect people from injury, but basically to keep people in line.
I hereby pledge myself to the ultimate dissolution of the Sheriff's Department.
Do you think the general public is ready to accept this rather startling revolutionary plan, Mr. Acosta?
As a whole, no, I don't. No, sir.
How do you expect to win?
It's going to be difficult.
The beautiful thing about Oscar is that he's made himself useful again, and somehow we were very fortunate that it got made now in a time like this. One can really appreciate his spirit, his fearlessness, his creativity, his joyful descent. I think it will come in handy right now to remember people with that much creativity and that much courage and that much fun. I mean, Oscar really insisted on this idea. He said, the revolution doesn't have to be a drag. You know, I think we should enjoy ourselves. And certainly Latino youth are coming under fire once again, getting scapegoated for all kinds of reasons. So I think they can use someone with a big set of, as Chris Matthews like to say, of cojones. I think it's Oscar's time again.
I lifted General Zeta from an old movie classic, La Cucaracha. He was a combination of Zapata and Villa, with Maria Felix as the femme fatale. It suited me just fine.
Qué bonito, Sarape.
My goal was to gather 1 million brown buffaloes on my side. And then I would present the demands for a new nation to both the U.S. government and the United Nations.
Without getting to, you know, the nitty-gritty, why did it take so long to make the film?
In the model, conventional movie-making model that Hollywood works on, there was never any bankable fat Mexican star. And there hasn't been then, and there isn't one now. So that makes things tough. So we were fortunate to be able to kind of come up with an idea of a way of using existing motion picture footage of Oscar and photography and audio recordings, recollections of colleagues and friends and enemies, and then kind of recreate lots of things and try to, so it's a kind of a mixed, I don't know how to think about the film. It's a mixed genre style that a place that public media, I think, was a little nervous about it at first. When you've got a figure that's so interesting and yet there's so few resources with which to build him out, you've got to be inventive and you've got to do it a la Mexicana, you know. Do it as you can with whatever resources are available to you. And I think that's a way of making a film about Oscar is very appropriate to a character that was always in the process of recreating himself, you know, under a lot of strain, both psychological and racial and political. I think the film really, really effectively expresses his spirit.
The Chicano movement had begun to solidify. Things had gotten heavier, and Chicano consciousness was spreading. Chicanos were within our own mother country, yet the white man saw us as immigrants. This was wrong. We were here before the white man. They took our country away from us. We needed to have our own government. Nothing less would save the Chicanos.
What did you learn about yourself while making this film?
I embraced Oscar Acosta because I feel like him a lot of the time, you know, just not sure, searching, impatient, full of rage and curiosity and a restlessness. And I loved him for how difficult he is. And, you know, so often in cinema, the degree to which we get seen, we are all rather pliable, a little bit underprepared, somebody's mascot, somebody's maid. And Oscar was not any of those things. He was defiant, proud, warrior, and with a sense of humor and a lot of heart. You know, I like to think of myself that way. So I suppose in a certain way, I was really affirming my own right to be myself in making this picture.
I am a Chicano by ancestry and a brown buffalo by choice. And I suspect the gods of war are not yet through with me.
And now we move on to director Peter Bratt's film, Dolores.
The film is about Dolores Huerta, who co-founded the first farm workers union in the history of the United States. She's an incredible, iconic figure, an American original, we call her. But she's little known to many Americans, and we hope that the film, which chronicles her life and her work, will change that.
This film is also a hybrid of sorts. It uses traditional documentary-style storytelling, but the distribution is a bit unique. It had a theatrical release in September of last year and was shown in theaters across the country. And now it has a broadcast premiere on PBS this month. Funding for the film came from a surprising yet familiar source.
I really have to acknowledge my brother Carlos Santana, who really had the idea and the inspiration to tell Dolores' story. He called me up 5 years ago and said, we have to tell her story right now while she's still with us. She just turned 87, you know, this year. She's still going strong doing the work. But he felt an urgency to tell her story and really put a stake in the ground and financed it. You know, he was just really committed to Dolores' story getting out there. And so, you know, as a collaborator, he really trusted me as the filmmaker. And, you know, basically he had three directives. He was like, you need a captivating beginning, a compelling middle, and a dynamic ending.
I too have the dream that I learned from Dolores Huerta, that farm workers can share in the wealth that they help to produce.
She has such a firm belief in what she's doing, that she infects you with it.
When we started to organize farm workers, people would say to us, they're poor, they don't speak English, they're not citizens. How are you going to possibly organize them? And of course, the response that we had to that is, the power is in your body.
Dolores Huerta herself is the principal voice in telling her own story, and it does confront some difficult truths, such as having to work in the shadow of Cesar Chavez and other men in the early days of the United Farm Workers Union.
Cesar, what made you pick Dolores, a woman, to help you form the United Farm Workers?
We had worked before together, and she believed, as I did, that this job could be done, the workers could be organized. She had the faith and the drive and the enthusiasm, so those are some of the reasons. The skills, a lot of knowledge, and a lot of just willingness to sacrifice.
Dolores, if someone just came in and put $5,000 in your lap and said, I want you to spend this totally on yourself, Dolores, nobody else, what would you do with it?
Well, I would I'd turn around and contribute it to the union. That's what I would do. I
mean, no,
because that would be spending it on myself, because to me, this is my life's work. To me, you know, this is the reason I live.
But don't you ever have the average woman's dream of going out to some spa and being relaxed and having a new hairdo and buying a great dress and having a big party?
Well, to me, having having a hairdo and being in a spa would be a terrible waste of time.
The film offers an unvarnished view of the toll a life of organizing took on her family life.
My mom would always tell us, you're poor by choice.
We have a tendency to want to be too comfortable, you know? And I'm trying to educate my children in the way that I'm raising them to give their lives to work for other people. And I'm hoping that out of the, 11 that I've got, I sure ought to come out with a pretty good percentage.
We didn't get it at the time, the lessons that she was trying to teach us, and in fact, we were, like most teenagers, rebellious and angry about her ideas of materialism. Our biggest dream was just to be like the kids at school who had all the latest fashions, but we didn't get any of that stuff.
So we knew we were outside of the norm for sure.
Dolores is a perfect example of a Latina. She's a woman of color who's been deliberately and literally written out of the history books. She's been marginalized. And by telling the story and telling it in a way that I believe is authentic, it kind of brings her back to the center. And I'm hoping that people can hook into that story and find something, that inspires them. And that we found that to be the case. You know, certainly everyone comes from a family. You know, everybody had a mother. And so like you pointed out earlier, it was that familial element, of Dolores trying to negotiate this all-consuming work of hers, and at the same time trying to raise 11 children. And what is the sacrifice? What does that look like? A lot of people can if they haven't experienced that firsthand, they can at least hold it, within their imagination, like, oh my God, I could never do that. But like you said, Dolores is she's very candid and frank. She speaks without filters, and I think that really makes her human and accessible, and we found that people kind of see themselves, in her.
I remember my grandpa telling me how important it was to the Latino community here in California that Robert Kennedy came in and stood with them when the sheriff and police department were actually arresting these people for doing lawful things. Harvard-educated guy from Massachusetts talking a funny accent, stand with us, it meant something.
You can't imagine a political figure of that station these days going after corporations with that vigor. For who? Not for his own, not even on his coast.
Wow, right? We have somebody of national prominence who knows who we are, and he's running for president, has a chance to win.
We came back for the party and we had TV set up, and I could see my mother on the television screen next to Kennedy and him acknowledging the farm workers.
And all of those Mexican Americans who were such supporters of mine. And Dolores Huerta, who is an old friend of mine and has worked with the union, to thank her and tell her how much I appreciate her coming tonight. We have certain obligations and responsibilities to our fellow citizens, which we've talked about during the course of this campaign, and I want to make it clear that if I'm elected President of the United States, with your help, I intend to keep that. Now it's on to Chicago, and let's win there. Thank you very much.
Some people became very cynical after Robert Kennedy was killed, but we had to continue to keep on working for justice and nonviolence, because that's what Robert Kennedy would have wanted us to do.
Dolores was the closest one to Senator Kennedy, and having been witness to something as terrifying as that, made her understanding of nonviolence even more important, because she saw firsthand the impact that violence can have.
Hatred and racism are extensions of violence. And if we become that which we're trying to end, then, you know, we are becoming like the oppressor then. And we're trying to set up a different system.
What did you learn about yourself while making this film?
I would say that one of the main things that I learned in this process of you know, combing through the archives and trying to chronicle Dolores' rise and fall with her work is that sometimes, you know, me personally, when I look out at the political landscape, I want to retreat. You know, I want to give up. I feel like my voice doesn't matter. I feel like, you know, sometimes I feel like, why even go vote? You know, I feel ineffectual. And I think watching Dolores, I mean, like I said, she's 87 and she's still out there doing the work, tireless. And she hasn't lost a step. Even when she was almost killed, you know, she almost lost her life, she recovered and bam, she was right back at it again. And so for me, telling this story has kind of reinforced my fortitude and my commitment not to give up. Certainly as an independent filmmaker, you know, you oftentimes want to cash in the chips, because for every yes that you hear, there's 1,000 no's, you know. And so, you know, she helped me kind of keep my eye on the long game, you know.
And finally, I asked Peter Bratt for his thoughts on the bigger picture of telling stories that are inclusive in the form of the unprecedented success of the feature film Black Panther.
First of all, let me say, I'm going to get my popcorn tonight. Me and my wife are going to see Black Panther, because we want to keep that box office going. But just watching, you know, what's been happening with the film and what people are saying and writing about the film. And this is on the heels of Coco, you know, which came out by, you know, through Pixar, but it's also Disney. I'm like, damn, Disney. Disney's doing something. I really hope that Black Panther and its model really just once and for all conveys the message, you know, to the powers that be, that, you know, there are audiences that are craving and dying for content that reflects the diversity of the country. And sometimes I avoid using the term diversity, you know, because it's used in dog whistle politics today so much, you know, by the left and the right. And diversity is really just, it's the nature of life, you know? And I think audiences, you know, want to see honest portrayals of the life that they see, you know, every day, you know, refracted around them. And so when you have a film like Panther or Coco or even some other films, I think this speaks to and taps into this desire, you know, to see the world, you know, represented as it truly is. So, I mean, I really hope it's a positive sign for filmmakers. And I certainly hope, you know, Latinos here in the United States, I hope it opens up doors for those storytellers to come through and use the platform to get their stories out there. Their Latino audience is dying and waiting for content that also reflects them and their everyday struggles in life and love, you know?
Art of all kinds is supposed to make us think about ourselves, about the world around us. And when you couple that philosophy with the adage I heard as a young man, that if you don't know where you came from, you'll never know where you're going. When you put all that together, we begin to understand the importance and the power of the story of these two historical figures, Oscar Zeta Acosta and Dolores Huerta, to inspire and to motivate. Our thanks to filmmakers Philip Rodriguez, who came to us from NPR member station KPCC in Pasadena, and Peter Bratt, who spoke to us from the studios of Jefferson Public Radio in Ashland, Oregon. Please reach out to Alt Latino on Facebook and Twitter. We are NPR's Alt Latino. I'm Felix Contreras. Thank you for listening.